tomorrow morning, all of Southeast Texas will wake up to death and carnage. It's all over the news, radio, and TV. A 31-degree Arctic air mass is descending upon us as I speak, and all we can do is watch. A 1/16 of an inch thick sheen of ice will blanket remote intersections. Toppled cars will line the streets. People will be flash frozen into solid blocks of ice and stick to the ground where they once stood. Moonbeam and I have our Rita kit. If we could survive this 31-degree Arctic air mass. And if we don't, brew on, brothers. Brew on.
He's very good, ain't he?
All right, well, there you go. That's pretty much my interview that I'm going to send out to every single radio station and TV channel in Southeast Texas tomorrow. Man, they were digging deep. Every time you turned on the TV and radio, that's all you can hear was this Arctic air mass is going to release untold peril on Southern Texas. And honestly, it didn't get any colder than 31 degrees, and that was just for about 30 minutes, I believe. But you turned on the TV, and there was reporters in full Arctic suits, some kind of rain gear, special order equipment, I'm assuming, from oil rig up in the Arctic or something, with an umbrella on top of that. Jesus Christ, man, give me a break. All I wanted to do was check the traffic today or whatever. But anyway, and yeah, Moonbeam's home now, so you won't have to hear no more of Lonnie Mack's music. That first cover wasn't a cover, actually. It's one of my original tunes off of one of my CDs that I've cut in my studio here. But Moonbeam's home now. She was on the way home, and she had told me that I can only play my own music when I'm by myself. But she's in there womanizing the blues room, I guess, putting together a couple of good tunes for the rest of this show. So anyway, I guess I'll go ahead and start this show. This is going to be more of a technical start, which is uncommon for illnuts.com, but I'm going to go ahead and throw down a technical topic right off the bat, because I'm a member of several forums, some large, some small forums, and then some of the smaller forums like Johnny Mack's my Masternauts forum that I kind of started a few years ago is just thriving. I like these smaller forums because it's a little bit more personable and you get into some very good discussions and debate. And there's a raging debate going on in this one of these particular forums I will not mention about forced carbonation versus natural carbonation. And I may inadvertently have started this little debate over a year ago, and it's so fun to watch it develop. It's well over a year old now, and it pops up maybe every 2 weeks or so, once a month, usually about a couple times a month. And man, there we go. It's just like riding a big horse. You jump on, or playing buck-buck, and you just jump on and ride. And it's fun to watch all these little conversations develop, and there's so much to learn in these little forums. And, from friends and different perspectives on things. But this particular topic was about forced carbonation that I inadvertently had started, forced carbonation versus natural carbonation. And I had maintained a little bit over a year ago that there is a big difference, and I still maintain there's a difference. And the cool thing is I have the microphone, so everybody has to listen. So here's my spiel. And even though I started this, I get to have more fun with it. But I had maintained that there's a difference in forced carbonation versus natural carbonation, or forced carbonation versus slow forced carbonation. I'm talking about kegs and hooking up your CO2 to a keg. And some people, you know, I've never done this, and there's a lot written about forced carbonation. Some people hook their kegs up, you know, they put it in a keg, their beer, and they hook it up to about 7,000 PSI, and they put it in the back of their truck, and they drive through the woods and bounce it around, and they bring it home and throw it over a fence and kick it around in the backyard and roll it around in a living room and put it in the bar and drink. And that's fine. But I had maintained, and somewhere I theorized this, that the bubbles in that forced carb beer, albeit at first, are larger than if you had, in given time, had let it naturally carbonate with the CO2 hooked up. What I do is hook my kegs up at 12 PSI and forget about it. Well, for about 3 or 4 days is before I start trying to test it for carbonation. And I test it quite thoroughly, each and every keg, when I hook them up to the CO2. But I've always liked to hook my kegs up to 12 PSI and forget about it. I don't turn the CO2 off every night. That's a whole nother show, apparently, because that's another raging debate within this particular forum. And it's a very fun debate. But I hook my kegs up to 12 PSI. I don't care what kind of ale it is. Again, I don't do, rarely do lagers. And I leave it at 12 PSI. I don't turn the CO2 off, and I forget about it. I clear it and hook it up the CO2 and forget about it. In about a week, it's just perfect. It's cleared, and it's perfectly carbonated. And the bubbles, after a week, week and a half or two, are incorporated into the beverage. And of course, we're talking about beer, and I mean incorporated down to the molecular level. And that's the difference, I think. So if a fellow was to carbonate it at a very high PSI, and then that very same night pour a bottle slowly into a bottle and bring it to his club competition down at a particular jute joint down the road that we frequent, I maintain that there's a difference, and you can tell the difference just by looking at the bubbles, how old it is as far as the carbonation goes, how long it's been since it's been carbonated. And I liken this, I don't know where I came up with this, but this is just how I think. But I liken this to going down to Taco Bell and getting a big bean burrito and a big large soda pop out of the fountain. You know, that cardboard box sitting over in a corner full of syrup, just a cardboard box with a plastic bag full of Coke syrup in it, it's not carbonated. And when you pour that out of the soda fountain, it carbonates it at the nozzle. And if you bring it back to your table and you're eating your big bean burrito or whatever, and Frijoli, that was one of my favorites, and you're looking at that soda pop in that big gulp, big man glass that you ordered, the bubbles are large. They're very large bubbles. And if you sat there and took your time and ate, you know, by the time you're done, that soda is pretty much flat. And I maintain that's because the CO2 in that soda pop, that Coca-Cola that you purchased in that man-sized glass, the CO2 was not fully incorporated or supersaturated down to the molecular level at that time. So, but liken that to when we were kids and we went down to Mr. Woodward's. We had a Mr. Woodward's store down in the bayous of Louisiana where I was raised. And you bought a soda pop for a dime or whatever, 15 cents out of the Coke machine out by the gas pump, you know, in the glass bottle, and poured that into a glass, the bubbles were much finer, because that CO2 was incorporated down to the molecular level. And it takes time, and that's the whole point that I've tried to point out. It's all a matter of time. And I should say that in the end, no matter how you carbonate, in the end, given time, you can't tell the difference. So that's the big raging debate going on in our forum over the last. It is so fun to watch and play with. But that's how I sum it up. So that's the big debate right now. Some people maintain there's absolutely no difference. I think there is a difference at first. So now we know how we put gas in. You fellas and gals, you know how to put gas into the beer. And how does it come out of beer? Well, they find nucleonation sites. Now, that's a new word. You probably thought I was going to say nucleation. But being from Texas, I'm going to call it nucleonation. And that's just the way I like to pronunciate it. So, nucleonation sites. And what is a nucleonation site? Well, that could be a bit of sugar, a protein. It could be a bit of grain. It could be a piece of lipid. Or there's several things in your beers that create nucleonation sites. And I should probably go ahead and say nucleation, or I'll get a bunch of emails. All right. So nucleation sites. Okay, Moonbeam's giving me the evil eye. Now she likes to pronunciate words properly. So, but these nucleation sites, and it could be in the glass. It could be a deformation in the side of the glass. Some very fine glassware, particularly Belgium, has some very fine glassware that has a little point in the very bottom of the glass, and just a little bitty raised point, and it is so small most people don't even know it's there, and that creates a natural nucleation site for the CO2 to develop, and then it gets enough molecules developed to where it comes out of suspension. And as CO2 comes out of suspension, it could be in the middle of the glass, on the edge or the bottom, anywhere. As it rises to the top of the glass, the bubble gets bigger and usually doubles in size. And as it hits the surface of the beer in the glass, it creates a small, very small, minuscule white cap effect. And, of course, that white cap effect, as the bubble bursts, helps create the head on the surface. And that's why a lot of fine Belgian ware has this nucleation, built-in nucleation site, in the middle, in the bottom of the center of the glass, and it keeps a nice little puddle of foam right there in the middle of your glass. Of course, glassware is a whole nother show in itself, too. But anyway, I've rambled on way too long about this goofy topic, but it's so fun because I've got the Big L Nuts radio microphone, so I can really speak my piece because I don't type too well. So, but anyway, we'll ask Moonbeam what's up next. We'll take a real short little blues break and let her do a little talking for a change.
Oh my gosh, you didn't go into the whole bubble theory, did you?
Yes, I did. Why? Is that boring?
I wonder if there's anybody else listening at all or if they all fast-forwarded to my part.
Well, sweetheart, these are beer geeks. You know, beer geeks like things like that. They like big words like that.
I suppose so.
So you want to play a song. I saw you fumbling around in the blues control room. What'd you come up with?
Yeah, I came out with a song by Gene Kelton and the Die Hard called Party on the Levee.
Party on the Levee by Gene Kelton. I know Gene only through you. You've known Gene for a long time. Who is Gene Kelton?
Yeah, he's been around the area for a really long time. I met him about 15 years ago at the Turtle Club.
At the Turtle Club there in Seabrook? That's where you introduced me to Gene. Very nice guy. Gene's got, what, two or three CDs out?
He has two CDs out, and he's working on the third one. This one came out about 2 years ago.
Yeah, one thing I know about Gene, he's all original. So he's on three CDs now, and it's all original music. It's all down-home Texas Southern blues, huh?
Yes.
So you know Gene pretty well. You want to play Gene, we'll listen to it. So this is off of what CD?
The CD is called Mean Guitar.
Mean Guitar. This is track number 15, Party on the Levee?
Yeah.
Is that a thing against Louisianians?
No, I don't think it's exactly against them.
You ain't making fun of me or something?
Or something.
Okay. Well, here we go. Very good, Moonbeam. Party on a levee. Hey, what do you think about going camping?
Like in a tent?
Oh, we're talking tent camping. We're talking tent camping on the dirt.
Oh.
In the woods in Warda, Texas. I got an email from Mr. Ed Moore of the KGB and Foam Rangers also. And Mr. Ed Moore has been in all of them. Mr. Ed Moore is one heck of a brewer and one of the best mead makers I've ever met in my life. But we call him Mr. Special Ed. For all you Southern Texas people know what I'm talking about. He's a swell guy. Got an email from Mr. Ed Moore, March 30th through March 31st, Bluff Creek Ranch in Warda, Texas. It is the second annual Texas Beer Backwoods Homebrew Festival. Now, we didn't go last year. I think I heard about it last year. We didn't get to go because I think I was at Kennedy Space Center at that time, if I recall. But this year, I want to go. So you're going to just have to drop your curling iron and take them bow rits out of your hair and grab that flannel shirt and them mountain boots, and we're going to go tent camping on the ground. So what do you think about that?
Not in a hotel room or anything?
No, there ain't many hotel rooms around there. This is at Bluff Creek Ranch. Apparently Mr. Ed and other people, and I don't know if it was just Mr. Ed, I think it was several people have rented quite a bit of that park, 100 tent sites and several RV sites. And they're going to have a Backwoods Homebrew, second annual Backwoods Homebrew Festival. And it ought to be pretty fun because we read a little bit about the one they had last year, and I understand they had a blast. This is going to be a come one, come all from all walks of Texas. I'm sure, as I understood last year, people came from all over. There's 110 sites. That's a lot. It lists several RV sites. If you call and reserve an RV site with power and electricity, I suppose maybe you can go borrow one of them RV people, camper, maybe curl your hair and put on something real nice. But I'll be over there in the woods by a campfire. What do you think about that?
I could bribe them.
Well, you know where I'll be, and I'm sure you'll be there having a ball, too. But there's 100 tent sites, and that last number 100 is going to go quick, I'm afraid. It's going to be just about as hot as the last piece of fried chicken at a country cookout. But there's other things to do, too, I understand, by reading this email, which I'll put on the show notes, by the way. I'm going to put this whole email from Mr. Ed on the show notes page. I'll attach to this particular show. I'll give some linkages to the park and all that stuff, Bluff Creek Ranch in Warda, Texas. And there's other things to do. I understand in LaGrange, what's the brewery, sweetheart? What's that brewery? Creech?
I think it's called Creech.
Creech Brewery was the first brewery in Texas, and it's ruins now. It's actually a block brewery. Is that true? It's made out of all blocks. It looks like an old Belgian brewery or something, and it's lay in ruins now, and they actually give tours, a couple hours each day that you can go and look at this brewery. I believe it's pronounced Creech. But I'll put links to that brewery on the page. There's things like that to do all around Bluff Creek Ranch. Although I haven't been there, we've been near around that whole area. So I think it'll be a blast. So I'll put this all in the show notes, and you can check it out and maybe make some reservations, and we can see you there. You know, I was talking to Johnny Max the other day. He called me. But me and Johnny were talking about this little Warda, Texas Backwoods Homebrew Festival. He was talking about maybe renting a booth or something so he can sell his Captain Ron thongs. And I guess I'll just stand off to the side and high-five people or something. I don't have nothing to sell. But I think that would be a blast. If we can all meet up from anybody that's hearing this and can make it, that would be a real blast to get out there and have a homebrew party at the Backwoods Homebrew Festival. So check that show notes page. All right, Moonbeam, you got some music lined up for later? I got something to take care of.
Yeah, I have a song or two.
All right, well, I'll be right back. Well, I just got off the phone with my good friend Johnny Max. You know where my good friend Johnny Max is at right now? My good friend Johnny Max is up in Memphis, Tennessee with a big foamy head, Mr. Rick and Dick. I can hear them all talking about 90-minute double IPAs and slamming back ribs. I even heard talk of Sammy Claus and things such as that. What's it going to take for me to get a gig like that?
Okay, well, Lonnie's outside beating his head against the wall. I'm going to go ahead and play some blues here. It's off of Jay Hooks' CD, self-titled CD, track number 6. The name of it's When Your Lover Don't Love You. It's a really neat song. It's short, though.
Going down. I wake up every evening when the sun's going down. In the shadow of darkness, I do my running round. I'm a bad man, baby, just as bad as I can be. I'm a bad man, baby, just as bad as I can be. When my love somewhere else, get what I need. again. I wake up every evening when the sun's going down. I wake up every evening when the sun's going down. In the shadows of darkness, I do my running round.
So how come you never took me to see Jay Hooks?
Well, the last I heard about him was 3-4 years ago, and he was going on a tour in Europe. And I haven't heard anything, and nobody else has heard anything from him since.
Well, that's too bad. Maybe one day you can look him up, and we'll go check him out. So you're going to put together a final song for the end of the show here? I'm going to come up here in about 10 or 15 minutes. I'll be needing one more.
Yeah, I'll pick out something good.
All right, baby. All right, well, for now, I'm going to piggyback just a tad off of Mr. Johnny Max. You know, his last show I thought was a great one. And they were talking about podcasts, and he was going on with other people making some great interviews over the phone and stuff. I listened to the Brew Bubbas, and they're making great interviews off of the phone, over the phone. And I listened to the Big Foamy Head, and they're interviewing great clarity interviews. All three of these podcasts are interviewing very quality interviews over the phone line. And here's Lonnie Mack. You know, I've got a few great interviews lined up. You know what Moonbeam and I have done for the last week with all this equipment here? And I could go on with a long list of what I think to be pretty fine gear. And what it's done is nothing more than complicate everything. So I have no phone lines in this house, Moonbeam or I. There are no phone lines in this house. We don't have a hard line per se. We both live off of cell phones and have for years. And I am finding it is very difficult to get a cell phone to work on this podcast. I've tried everything under the sun. So I found the saving grace, I thought. I found something I heard Jamil Zainashef mention a while back, and I've heard of it before, was Skype. So, man, there we go. I rush home and download a version of Skype software, and it's the coolest thing. Except I can't hear Deb, and she can't hear me for a solid week now. Either she can hear me and I can't hear her, or I can hear her and she can't hear me through all this gear. You know, I've got three humongous sound cards running this equipment here. And finally tonight, the big breakthrough after a week. We can hear each other. Except we both sound like we were speaking in Chinese. So I think I'm getting a little bit closer. I really think so. I've got a couple great interviews lined up. I want to say that I think most everybody would be interested in. So hopefully by next show, I'll have a couple people talking on here other than Lonnie Mack and Moonbeam. But for now, maybe we can just ramble on and listen to some good music. So speaking of rambling on, this show is L About Beer here at LNuts.com. So I did want to go back and touch on one more little technical topic. And this could be the rocket science segment, I guess. But I wanted to talk about clarity. I alluded to that in the first segment, kind of breezed right over clarity. To me, clarity is very important. There's nothing I like more than producing a product and having it come out of that pearlic tap on the bar just like diamonds pouring into the glass. I really pride myself on clear beer when it's supposed to be clear. And we all know there's some beers that better not be clear. But how does beer clear? Well, there's several methods. Other than filtration, they will all have to do with Stokes' Law. Filtration, you actually force and filter the beer. But in short of that, even using finings, they all still rely on Stokes' Law. So what in the world is Stokes' Law? Stokes' Law states that the rate of sedimentation in an idealized spherical particle is directly proportional to the difference of the density of the particle in the liquid medium and acceleration due to gravity and a square radius of the particle and inversely proportional to the viscosity of a liquid. All right, so what the heck does that mean? As in the first segment, it's all really a matter of time. If you just leave your beer alone, Mother Earth, gravity will take care of it all. For the most part, we all know there's some particles that just won't fall out, it seems. Some yeast, it won't fall out. But for the most part, yeast will sediment and well, about 7 inches a day. If you took one yeast cell, on average, an expended dormant yeast cell will fall through the keg or the carboy about 7 inches a day, 18 centimeters a day, something of the sort. And all this information came off of our very own WWW. So that's where I get it from. But how I clear my beer, because I do like a very sparkling clear beer, when we brew a sparkling clear beer, we want it to be sparkling clear. If we're going to present a beer for judgment to a BJCP judge, and the BJCP guideline says the beer should be clear, then we probably want it clear because that gives a very good impression. Receiving a beer that's all murky, like a cream ale or something, you know, it kind of sets a tone. We're all a human, really. So if it says it should be clear, I like it clear. But how I do it is use gelatin. I've never used sparkaloid or some of these other fining agents, which I hear work phenomenal. Personally, I've always used Knott's KNOX gelatin. And I use 1/2 cup of water. I bring it to 170 in a microwave oven. Just 1/2 cup of water, and I pour in 1/2 pack of Knox, KNOX gelatin, and dissolve that. And I pour this in my chilled beer. This is so important to chill your beer down as cold as you can possibly get it before you add your fining agents in your bar or kegerator or wherever you have it chilled. Another important part is to not disturb it after the fact. But after you've chilled the beer, because what you want to do is coagulate the chill haze, the proteins that coagulate at certain cold temperatures. If you try and clear warm beer, you're really getting nowhere. You can clear warm beer, then chill it. You're still going to have protein haze. And there again, if you disturb it after you've cleared the beer in the keg and then you haul it around or whatever and disturb it and resuspend the gelatin or whatever you use to clear the beer, it won't just jump back up there and start working all over again. It's pretty much going to be murky to the last drop. Unless you use the Stokes Law and just leave it alone, and Mother Time indeed will take care of everything. But that's how I clear my beer. But it don't start after I chill the keg. It starts with me in the mash tun, and that's getting particles through to the wort. I try as best I can to minimize getting particles through to the wort because I recirculate the mash quite thoroughly with Brutus, and recirculates the whole mash pretty much through the whole mash timeline, be it an hour and a half, depending on what mash profile I'm running. But the idea is, if and it's the old adage, if you put crap in, you know, you got to get crap out. Crap in, crap out, except we want to get the crap out. So you start at the mash tun and try not to put crap in. I mean, really, that's the idea I go by. So I minimize the particles that flow through the mash into the wort, because then you're going to boil the wort and the hot break is going to coagulate proteins. And then you boil the wort and you boil it vigorously, not just for protein coagulation, but for hot profile as well. That's a whole nother thing. And then in the end, when you cool, you chill your wort, you're trying to get cold break. So you've had your hot break, and now you want your cold break. And after I chill the beer, I let it sit for quite a long time because you may not know, you know, even though you get cold break during a good rapid chill and you're all proud because you chilled it so quickly, it takes a long time for the cold break to sediment in the bottom of the kettle. So I let that sit there for an hour or so. After I've chilled it down, I usually chill it down way below 65. And after an hour, it's warmed back up to about 65, which I like to pitch at. Then I gently transfer it, gravity transfer it into the stainless steel fermenter pot, which I alluded to in another show. And so you minimize the particles going in, and then I'll ferment it like usual. Fermentation removes particles by coagulating the yeast, coagulating particles. And drop out of suspension. There again, the yeast is going to fall out pretty rapidly. Even at a single yeast cell, it's going to fall out quite rapidly. The problem we worry about is NMPs, non-microbiological particles, and that's little bits of protein or grain dust or whatever, what have you, that is most certainly in our wort, in our finished fermentation, our our fermented beer. It still contains all this stuff and probably always will. Even the best filter is going to leave something behind. There again, them act as nucleation sites, as I alluded to earlier. But you want to minimize that from the very outset. And then in the end, when you chill that beer down to 34 or whatever I usually do, and then add that gelatin, and I do it, it's all one step with me. I chill the beer after I get it out of the fermenter. I put it in my kegs, and I chill that beer down to 34 or so, maybe 35 for a day and a half. And at that point, I add the gelatin to the kegs, hook them up to CO2 at 12 PSI, and just wait it out as long as I can. And usually when I get back to the tap, it is just sparkling, sparkling clear. And so that's what I strive for. And it's really easy. If you get that Knox gelatin, K-N-O-X, 1/2 cup of 170 degree water with 1/2 a pack of Knox gelatin in it, and just gently pour that warm gelatin that you've heated in a microwave on top of that ice cold beer, and just forget about it. And then seal it back up and blanket it with CO2 and go ahead and start carbonating at that point. And you'll have great clear beer. So there, that was segment number 2. It is indeed all about beer. But I do have one more little thing I want to take care of.
Microsoft, can I help you?
Yes, ma'am or sir. I was wondering if you had some smaller fonts that I can have for my website. All right, well, that was a great segue into my next small segment that I wanted to at least express my thanks for everyone that visits my website, and I really appreciate it. I know it's a little hard to read, but you see, the smaller fonts I put on there, and including a black background, you know, I figure it's a little harder to read. And when I look at my stats, it seems as though you've spent a lot of time on my website. Now, I know deep inside that you're just having a hard time reading the goofy thing, but it's pretty cool nonetheless. And I really appreciate everybody stopping by elnuts.com and checking out Brutus 10 and the bar and other things. I'd have never thought that it would have grown to what it has grown into at this time, but personally, I thank everyone for stopping by, but I'd also like to add, and I mentioned the other podcasters, man, you talking about scratching backs. These guys have given me a back rub like I've never had in my life, and I so appreciate it because they are such great shows. Mr. Johnny Max with BrewCrazy.com, Craig and Jerry with Brew Bubba's, and Rick and Dick with A Big Foamy Head, and even Jamil Zainashif mentioned me, which I so appreciate all these great people and great podcasts. So I would profess, while I try and figure out the electronics in this room, maybe once and for all, hopefully by show number 6, maybe you drop by and listen to all these great shows, because man, my iPod just can't get enough. So I think we're heading toward the end of this show. I see moonbeams coming back from the blues vault over there, with something under her arm. I bet it's pretty good. This show should be under 50 minutes and under 50 megabytes. And that's another problem I'm having. You know, it's a real struggle between sound quality and file size. And I just can't find that middle ground. And I will probably require a lot of help from these great podcasters that have gotten this process down. And maybe by show number 6, I'll have interviews. And it's actually something you can actually download into your iPod without burning a thing up at file size. But nonetheless, let's turn it over to Moonbeam for a final tune. And what you got there, Moonbeam?
Song by Omar and the Howlers called Leanne.
Now, I know because I've seen pictures all over our house of Omar. Who is Omar and the Howlers?
He's from Austin right now, but he was born and raised in Macomb, Mississippi.
Yeah, well, I know Mississippi quite well. I was kind of raised in Upper Mississippi. So how do you know Omar? Did you meet him down here in Southeast Texas somewhere or what?
Yeah, the first time I saw him and met him was at Billy Blues when it was open off Fountain View in Richmond.
Mm-hmm. And you've known Omar for quite some time there. Again, I've seen pictures all over this place of you and Omar palling around, having a brewski. So I'm sure it was a Budweiser back then because you didn't know me, right?
No, sir. It was a Jack Daniels
thing. Oh, okay. All right. Well, what song are we playing?
Called Leanne.
Leanne from what CD again?
Hard Times in the Land of Plenty.
Okay. Well, we'll end with that. So until then, brew on, brothers.
Best I can.